The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
I love it here. I've loved my time here. I love playing hockey here. I'm going to do whatever's best for myself and my family. And that's all that's in my power and consideration. And like I said, I don't know how the talks are going to proceed. I don't know what they're going to say. I don't know the future, but my main priority is my family. And where we'll be, where my kids will grow up, and who we surround my kids with, and there's a lot of aspects that go into it. It's not just numbers. It's not just where to play. I mean, there's endless amount of possibilities and options for a guy going to free agency, and you don't really know. You don't really know anything until everything's laid out in front of you. So I'm going to take some time in the next few weeks and really figure it out. And see how it goes.
No timeline for Alex Tuch. That's his message to the media today. As locker cleanout continues, we will hear later this afternoon from Lindy Ruff and general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen. So make sure you stay with Sabres.com and Sabres Social for that. Welcome in on Sabres Live with Marty. I'm Brian, and Alex Tuch's future is, of course, the big story now that we are in between seasons.
I can put a timeline on it. It's June 30th at 11:59 at night. Because really, when you get to June 30th at 11:59 at night and it flips to July 1, then at that point, Alex Tuch can only get 6 years from anybody. Right now, he can get 8 years from Buffalo. He could get 7 years from Buffalo until that time. But as soon as it flips to July 1, and we're now entering the new free agent rules, mm-hmm. where your own players are 7 years and players on another team are six, he's considered a full-out free agent, not a Buffalo Sabres on July 1. Even if he was to sign with Buffalo at 10:30 July 1, before the market opens at noon, it would still be a maximum of 6 years. So the timeline for me, for Alex Tuch and the Sabres, is there's still a month and a half, right? Or like 6 weeks or whatnot, to say, okay, this is what we can get done. And it may go down to that because of the dollar amount and the years and the age of the player and all of it. So, but I'm glad what Alex Tuch said in a way, because usually when you hear a player say, I'll do what's best for me and my family, it comes down to dollar signs. It comes down to making more money, because that's what's best for me and my family moving forward. But he did explain more of that, as in, you know, my kids, my family, who do I want to surround them with, schools and all of that. And I've been around the league. I've been New York, Philly, whatever. I can tell you,
do you always skip Long Island?
I said New York.
I know. That's but I know you only meant the Rangers.
Well, because I was there. My family did not experience Long Island. They don't even know where I lived when exactly. I was on Long Island, so that doesn't matter.
Why is this coming from this address? I know. Where is this?
Hey, it says you owe rent exactly. at this place. Where is that? But I can tell you this, when you look at quality of life and schools and people or whatnot, there's no Buffalo is right up out there on the list. Yes, there's great cities or whatnot, but when you take in all of these options, yeah. Buffalo is right there. The team has flipped the positive switch that they needed to. There's a lot of things that now go into Jarmo Kekäläinen's kind of bag of tricks and saying that's why Buffalo is good for you, and maybe it's not just $10.5 million or $10.25 million or $10.7 million. There's other things that come into play.
I'll ask the hard question before we hear from some of Tuch's teammates. Is he going to be a Buffalo Sabre?
So the hard question means a hard answer. there is about $12 million in cap space, and the cap going up to $104 million next year is significant.
Well,
the Sabres,
what's arguably more significant is 6.4 to Jeff Skinner next year.
That's what it is, because people can say, oh, they've got plenty of cap space. Look at the, you know, the Kulik and Oslin and Hellenius that could come in and some of that. Okay, and you have guys on great contracts like Tage Thompson on a great contract, and Matthias Samuelsson, and even Dahlin. Like, he's a Norris candidate. Like, that's a pretty good contract.
Yeah, his number is very good now moving forward.
Moving forward with what he's doing. So, but here's the thing. You have, like you said, $6.4 million to Jeff Skinner, and you have $12 million under the cap, like, projected for next season. And if you think that about 10 of that is going to be given to Alex Tuch, and then, well, Beck Malenstein needs a contract, and I would think that they will want to keep Beck Malenstein here.
Zach Benson needs a contract.
So you're like,
that's going to be...
You don't have the money. Like, it's just, it's becoming very, very difficult to fit it all in. So,
but you quickly
Michael Kesselring needs a contract, but that's a different situation, but it's still money.
It's still money, and, you know...
There
are moves to be made, obviously, to free up money. That's just the nature of all of this. You have players entering the final year of their deals. You know, do they move off of a Greenway? Do they move off of a Zucker?
Yeah.
These are, unfortunately, especially once they took the strides that they did, and then fans become even more attached to players that helped break the drought. These are just harsh realities that the GM is going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and the GM has a few cards to play when you look at, you didn't have Yuri Kulik for most of the season, but he's a player, mm-hmm. and he's part of this team. And Noah Austin is a player and part of this team. And what we saw in the playoffs is a Konsa Hellenius that's part of this team. So you're like, okay, how do we fit these three guys, and how do we take three guys out? Because the top 12 was pretty set mm-hmm. all season long. It was this group, and especially the top nine. But those three players I just mentioned are top nine candidates. So it's like, okay, well, who's coming out? And as you mentioned, maybe it's I mean, Peyton Krebs, a RFA, a restricted free agent. And he had a really good season.
Right. I mean, I think at minimum, Krebs is going to be looking, you know, plus or minus a little bit around the $3 million mark.
So $3 million for Krebs. Okay.
I don't know that for sure, but I'm just saying.
Let's
like
say
even
it's
as
ballpark, a... right? And projection, I can look it up because I got my AFP analytics that updated everything just this past week.
Send me the link. Maybe I'll use it.
I will send you the link. Like, they have Peyton Krebs at $3.5 million. So there you go. And they had Tuck at 10.2.
Mm-hmm.
So just those two players, that means that, well, you're already over the cap.
Right.
And so you're going to have to manage the cap. You're going to have to find, you know, you mentioned Greenway. Greenway has a no-trade clause, a limited no-trade
clause.
Five teams. But it's still, you know, a trade protection
gives
of some
you 26
sort.
Options.
Yes. We can make that work. It's not as
no,
limited.
And I don't even like talking about any. Like, I never like talking about that, obviously.
But what if one of those teams were in those five?
But the players obviously know that this is the reality of this. And
yes.
And you mentioned the guys that are under, you know, good contracts and long contracts moving forward, and that are part of the leadership group that obviously care deeply about Alex Tuch. Let's hear from them.
Mm-hmm. All I want is Tuchy to get back. That's the bottom line, and he's so big for us on and off the ice. It's his life. He does whatever he wants. I respect him for whatever he does, and but I just hope that him and Jarmo can find something good here.
I mean, I don't think it's a secret that everyone in that room wants him to come back. Yeah, he's a huge piece of this team and a massive reason why we got to where we did. He's my neighbor, lives across the street. We're very tight, so I don't think there's anyone in that room that wants him back more than me. But at the same time, it is it's a business, and you know, I understand that side of it. And you know, you get to free agency, it's a big deal, and there's a lot of work and you know, previous years that go into that to allow yourself to you know, fight for as much money, and it's obviously not all about money. but it's definitely a big factor. But, I know Tucky's heart and the amount of love that he has for this city and how much it's mean playing here. So I don't really know where his head's at. I know there's a lot of things that he's going to have to think about. Ultimately, I think it's just going to come down to what he feels is best for him and his family. And I think it's going to come down to, what Yarmo thinks is best for our team. So those guys will figure something out. And I'd be very grateful that, if he came back. But we just don't know. So leave it at that.
And we won't know for a while, presumably, unless, the general manager
I would think
has
like,
big news when he addresses the media this afternoon. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something. But I would think that for Alex Tuch, we're May 20th. Mm-hmm. It takes at least 10 days to kind of just decompress. And it's funny because you look at the decision.
Is that a fact? It's 10?
I would say plus minus 10, okay. Over under 10. Just a little vacay, a little getaway for a while, right? So, and then you get down to it. And I know Tucky, when he talked to media, says, well, starting today, we're going to talk. And, it may take a little longer than that. But in the end, I've made decisions with my contracts that I'm like, should have picked maybe differently. But you do what you think is right at that moment. Mm-hmm. And you go with it. And when you're all said and done, maybe you look back and you're like, I should have done this, should have done that. But in the moment, you do what is right. And you hope you get the right advice and you hope we make the right decision. And it is the right decision. It's just a matter of if it works or not. Like it's always, unless you do something absolutely stupid, that's never going to be the wrong decision. It's the right decision. It's just a matter of did it work
right, or
did it not work? That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And obviously this is the predicament that all the players are in with locker cleanup because they're being asked to look back mm-hmm. and look forward simultaneously. Yes. And it's never easy when you don't have the answers moving ahead. And from Tuck's standpoint, you think back to this last series after how the playoffs had started against the Boston Bruins, and he addressed his play against Montreal.
We battled really hard, and I thought Dobash played extremely well for him. Apparently, especially against me, coming off of a Boston series that I thought I was really strong, both offensively and defensively. I tried to carry some momentum into the Montreal series that ultimately led me to having 0 points. Everyone saw that, which is super frustrating because I thought my work ethic was there. As the series went on, I thought my attention to detail got better. I thought it slipped away from me a little bit in the middle of the series there when some frustration sank in, which for me is a little uncharacteristic because I pride myself on being a pretty consistent player. So offensively, I felt like I let my teammates down with that, but at the same time, I was really proud of my effort. I was really proud of... I guess a lot of things during this entire season. Ultimately came up short and it was devastating.
Yeah, those were the types of words that Alex used through his address today. Heart-wrenching and devastating. And that's still and going to be raw emotion, powerful words for a while now.
And then a lot of people are like, well, after that playoff against Montreal, there's no way Tuck is going to get 10+. And I'll tell you this, that's not how it works. Agents have conversations with GMs all year long. Mm-hmm. There's numbers that are floated in the air, right?
Yep.
And so once these numbers are out there, they're not, unless you say we're not going to sign you, they're not taken off the table. Like Alex Tuck had a really good season. He is and will be a wanted player, probably the top free agent this summer around the National Hockey League. That comes with a price. So I think that it's hard for, people to see that, well, despite that series, and Alex said it was a struggle. And you really, to be honest with you, maybe that's where the conversation about the summer comes into play. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, like, Thompson and Tuck together, but can there be somebody else with them? Like Peyton Krebs was a good player with them during the season, but when you get to second round, conference finals, Stanley Cup finals, do you have somebody that maybe would have picked them up in that moment and given them that support offensively or defensively? That maybe is more in a separate conversation to be had in the hockey department.
Holy cow, the show is flying by and we're just getting started. Shayna Goldman's going to join us at the bottom of the hour from The Athletic. But I just... This is impossible, so I won't ask you to be Alex Tuck, but be someone like him entering potentially unrestricted free agency at a time when the cap is going up and we have an unprecedented number of teams that have an enormous amount of money to spend. So, if hypothetically... You're talking to the Sabres, and maybe you know that the range is 9.5 to 11. And yet somebody else is willing, at minimum, to go 13.
Oh, wow.
Is it that cut and dry for you in that moment?
It is. It is, because it just... puts the Sabres in a bind that they finally kind of felt like they got themselves out of by performing and by being able to have depth and be able to have the top four in defense that you have. And we haven't even talked goaltending yet.
Well, like, we don't need to, because it's all under contract.
It's but what if there's an opportunity or a decision to be made to say, hey, okay, we need to look at upgrading goaltending. And I know they were good all season long, and maybe that's a overreaction from what happened against Montreal. But, I mean, you got to have all these conversations. But you're looking
true,
at...
True, but I don't
San
think...
San Jose, Anaheim, Pittsburgh, Washington. You're looking at all these teams that are... in the $65 to $70 million range right now, when the Sabres are at projected to be 92, they're projected to. So these teams are projected to have $40 million.
That's why I phrased the question the way I did.
An extra $2 million to make sure you get a player like Tuck.
Yes,
it could be thrown in there, and that puts. That's why I feel like teams are too kind to others. When teams are in a situation like, I remember Swayman a couple of years back.
Right, but this is where it's so different, because now way more teams have way more room to not be nice to somebody. This is not existing.
Because, if I don't do it, somebody else may, but I'm going to get involved because I want the guy.
And it's why Kaprizov got what he got out of Minnesota, because all they had to do was sit there and keep reminding Bill Guerin, you understand that these six teams have endless amount of dollars. They can do whatever they want to get my services at a higher number. And that's why it was startling in the moment that he could jump to become highest paid player. But it's really easy to understand it now as we get closer to this new world free agency.
That's why he made the move to get Quinn Hughes, because he's like, hey, you know what? Like, if I don't get him, there's going to be 500 or 600 teams that are going to try to get him, and I want the guy, and I want to be able to say, hey, our team is the place for you to be at.
Yeah.
And I think there is some very, very attractive destination. I'm not talking about location. I'm talking about teams. Like Anaheim and the way that they've been, San Jose and the way that they've been, Washington and the way they could bounce back, there's a lot of good teams that could fall into that.
Can I just try to put it back to a position that fans might like a little bit more? When I was trying to, hook you on the $10 million in Buffalo, $13 million somewhere else. Yeah. The best player in the game did take a major, major, major hometown discount to stay in Connor McDavid.
For 2 more years.
Yeah. I know. But some people in this market would say, hey, yeah, give me 2 more years of time. Whatever. I'm just saying, is it not still possible? Given that the best player in the league is willing to take a hometown discount, even though he's not even from there, but his career has been spent there?
I think that Connor McDavid is a exception to the rule, knowing that, you know what, like, I'll just take 2 years. Anyway, for me, right now, I can't sign for as much as I would want to, because the cap is not booming yet. This is the first year of the cap booming.
Right.
That's why for Kirill Kaprizov, it was the right time to do it. That's why for Alex Tuck, it'd be the right time to do it. But Connor McDavid in 2 years from now, he's going to be 20-plus. Easily 20-plus.
Presumably.
Presumably, because the cap going up and everything, so he's fine. Alex Tuck taking 2 years. Let's say he says, I'll take 2 years at 13, right, just to keep it short. He doesn't guarantee himself making 11, 11, 11, 11, 11 after that. He doesn't know. It could be like that didn't work out. Connor McDavid knows he's getting the 20-plus.
Right. Well, the other eight, there were many, and there will be more topics addressed, obviously, later today by Lindy Ruff and Jarmo Kekäläinen. From a player's standpoint, I found it very interesting because everybody's different and they see things and feel things differently. Just trying to explain the season and how it turned and when it turned or whether it was just this steady progression that turned into something special to end the drought. Tage Thompson talked about the December meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was in Calgary. Rask called a dinner with our leadership group. We went to dinner, just us, and talked about where we were at in the season, where we wanted to get to, how we were going to do it. You know, I think for us it was kind of just being brutally honest with each other, just asking what do you guys need to see from me on a nightly basis, and then guys would tell, you know, that individual what they needed to see, and it was all about just, all right, if you don't see that, I want you to hold me accountable and say something. And it's coming from a place of love. But I think that was, yeah, it was no real secret recipe or rah-rah speech. It was pretty simple. It's just look in the mirror and be better. And if you do that, you have the ability to hold other guys accountable. But it starts with yourself. I think when you're losing and things aren't going well, it usually flips and it's the opposite. And it's you need to do this, you need to do this, and you're not doing your part. So that's pretty much what that was about.
And they were better, the best, as a matter of fact, from December on.
Which didn't start the way that
which
they
is
wanted
why
to.
It's, no, it didn't. And that's why I think I... not enjoyed, but I reacted a little differently to hearing it through Alex Lyon, who obviously wasn't part of the leadership meeting. But on a different topic, he said, I'm still trying to process December to April.
Yes.
You know, and because he was unable to put the turnaround on any one particular thing. And I think most people would look at that the same way, because You can be all happy and proud that you had a hard meeting with honest conversations, but you still ended up needing an awful lot of things to go your way, including three goaltenders helping the equation to win more often than not.
So they go on a six-game road trip that starts in Philadelphia where they lose 5-2. They go in Winnipeg, a team they just beat 5-1 at home, by the way, and they lose 4-1 in Winnipeg. So they have a day in Calgary. That's where they call this meeting that Tage Thompson's referring to. They lose 7-4 to the 29th place team in the NHL the very next night. I wish I would have been in the plane or in the room and been like, what the heck just happened? Like, we had this meeting, we're all getting ready, we're thinking, like, this is going to be our time, like, we finally are looking at each other in the eyes, right, and saying what needs to be said, and then you lose 7-4. Luukkonen gets pulled after 2, Lyon goes in, they start Colton Ellis the next night in Edmonton, and then he gets hurt and Lyon goes in, and you hang on for dear life.
You blew a 3-0 third period lead.
Exactly, you hang on for dear life, and then you win one, and you're like, woof. Like, you had to win this one in OT 4-3. Okay. Yeah. That was Alex Tuck goal, right? In
yes,
OT.
Sir. First minute.
And then after that, well, Vancouver, they're not that good. You go out there. Seattle was just average. You go out there. But then it just kept going and kept going, right? And obviously there was the GM change, but there was health. Like, wow. Josh Norris came back right before that. So, but it's funny how you have a meeting. And Mike Johnson of TSN, NHL Network, always says these closed-door meetings are stupid because nothing ever comes out of it. Well, this could have been the same thing because they lost 7-4 the next night.
Right.
But it worked out to their favor, and because of a lot of other things too.
Yeah. I've worked with Johnny enough to know the exact tone in which he would deliver that, and that's what makes it more fun. Like, he's very efficient with his words, and you know exactly how he feels about things, yeah. And I love it. So,
but the difference with that is often you do a closed-door meeting, and there's a lot of guys. There's 22, 23 guys sitting in their stalls, right? 20 just played, and there's one person that talks, or maybe two. This was different. This was like, hey, let's go to dinner, six, seven guys, and let's have a few drinks, and let's really be honest with one another and have that conversation, which is great leadership. And I think more teams are leading towards these leadership groups and not just one person talking. Mm-hmm. Like if you had, you know, Michael Pekka in the locker room, he stands out. Well, you know what? You have other guys around that can talk as well. It's not because Rob Ray doesn't have a seat that he can stand up in a dinner and have an opinion. And that I think that's what this was all about.
Well, lots of Sabre reaction, obviously, on social and on Sabres.com. More Sabre talk with Shana Goldman from The Athletic next.
Nothing else comes close.
Always learning, at least we're trying to, here on Sabres Live. That's the mission statement every day. And when we went to The Athletic...
Is it?
Sorry, you're just letting you in
I'm
on the secret.
Learning.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just learning that. Good.
Shana Goldman from The Athletic is with us, and in big, bold letters says, the Sabres playoff window is open.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's in your latest article, Shana. Please elaborate.
Well, they went to the playoffs. The drought's over. The window's open. There you go. Lesson learned. No, listen, every time teams get eliminated, we talk about the winning team. We're like, okay, this is what we learned about them. Here's what they're going to do next round. And then with the losing team, you think of everything that went wrong. But sometimes it's like, okay, what are the actual takeaways here, right? And like for the Sabres, you can make a ton. You could start nitpicking and be like, hey, Rasmus Dahlin should have gotten the puck deeper in that moment. They should have managed it better at the blue line. And you could go through and nitpick every detail. But that... there's no game context anymore, right? So now we have to go big picture. And when you look at the Sabres, you go, they finally did it. They turned it around. They made a ton of progress this season. And it's not just regular season progress. You saw it take place in the playoffs too. You're seeing the breakouts of Zach Benson and Josh Stone. They're not just doing it in the regular season. In their first postseasons, they have these really impactful moments and were some of the best players in Buffalo. And when you look at the ages of this core and you look at some of the contracts, obviously there's work to do, but you also go, this could be the start of a very long playoff window. So now you have to find ways to keep it open.
Okay, so you mentioned the window is open, but there's business to be had. And you mentioned Zach Benson. I'm looking at the Sabres right now, projection for next year. They got about $12 million under the cap. Alex Tuck needs a contract. Benson needs a contract. Malenstein, Krebs, Kesselring. Which one is going to be the number one priority for the Sabres? Is it getting Benson done? Because he may be getting $5.5 to $6 million. Or is it Tuck? Because obviously there's a July 1 deadline on that.
Probably Tuck. I think restricted free agents tend to take a backseat, right? Like they're either handled immediately or it's like they can wait. And in Benson's case, I think you can wait a little just because they know they're going to keep him. It's just a matter of figuring out for how much and how long. And that'll be an interesting one because his market value for the next, I think, 7 years on average is $10 million, which sounds like a lot. And it is a lot, right? But that's the name of the game in today's NHL. He hasn't even hit his peak yet, and it's only up from here. But players don't usually make that. So, you know, his contract projection, I think AFP Analytics had him closer to $7 million, yep, which would be a great deal and give the Sabres a
long term. On the long term. Yeah. Like if you wanted
which
to go short
they
term.
To do. They're not going short.
Yeah, it would be like around four, but you know that then you're getting probably 9-10 after that.
Right, exactly. And like, they did that with Dahlin, and it made sense in the moment to go short term first, and then you have this massive long term deal. But like, those are the risks. So you go probably long term here with Benson. You go to that $7 million range, and you kind of have that carved out for him. But first, you figure out the Alex Tuck situation, because if not Tuck, then who, right? You need a superstar on this team. Yes, Benson, Doan, those are great players to have. And Norris and Oslin has potential. And Helenius was great. All of that's amazing to have. You got to have a deep supporting cast. But at the very top of their lineup, they need to figure out who the number one guy is, right? And I think you can make the argument maybe Tage Thompson's best served as a number two, and that's okay. So they have to decide, is it Tuck or is that money going elsewhere? And with very few free agents on the market, someone is going to pay Tuck, if not the Sabres, right? So you have to figure that part of it out. The other part of it is, if not, then who, is you look at the trade market, and you might have to be pretty active on that as well, because there's only so many available players around this year that other teams should be looking to be a little bit more active than usual. So I think that has to come first, and then you can start figuring out the pieces around that.
I think it's going to be really difficult to have Tuck and Benson.
Yeah, because you have $12 million, and then you have to think of Kesselring and Krebs and Malenstein. You're probably trying to have about $20 million plus in contracts going out, and you don't have that room right now. So, but maybe the Sabres entered the trade market, as you mentioned, and they trade contracts out to try to fit in. But the, you know, obviously Robert Thomas is a player that has been rumored at the deadline. People are going to bring him back up. Tage played the wing at the very end there, you know, in the last two games of the Montreal series. Do you think the Sabres would still be in the market for maybe say, hey, maybe it's not Tuck, maybe it's Robert Thomas, and we move these pieces around a little bit?
I say why not, right? Because you could go about it this two ways. You could say the Sabres could just load up on the wings and let the center chips fall as they may. They have Norris long-term. You know, Leek has a lot of potential. Oslin showed a lot of potential. Tage can play center or wing. So you just focus on the wings, and maybe you don't have perfect play-driving centers up and down your lineup, but the rest of the lineup balances out. We've seen teams have success with that before. I think of those early years of Vegas when, like, Chandler Stephenson's their first-line center, and it's because he has Mark Stone on his wing that it makes it work. But on the flip side of it, you could go after a center, solidify the middle of the ice, which was a little bit of a weakness this postseason. And if you believe center depth wins championships, there's that element of it too. But with Thomas in particular, you're getting cost certainty. And you're getting a pretty good deal too, because prices for centers have raised so much over the years, and free agency is only going to drive that even higher. So if you're getting a first-line caliber player with that certainty of what it's going to cost in the long run, that's a good thing to have, and that might buy them flexibility as well. So they should absolutely kick the tires on Robert Thomas. Anytime a good players on the market, you have to kick the tires, okay? I'm very into tiers of interest and pursuit. Kicking the tires is the bare minimum. Every general manager, you're not doing your job if you're not kicking the tires. I would go a tier above it here for the Sabres. And then the true pursuit is where you go, okay, this works. Now take that step forward.
We talked in the first half hour, Shayna, about the number of teams that will have an unprecedented amount of cap space this summer. We also talked about the Sabres' dilemma, which is this summer having the highest negative impact of a buyout, and that is Jeff Skinner at $6.4 million this coming season. After that, it plummets down to $2.4 million for the remaining 3 years. Would you be trying to have somebody take that Skinner money, and how would you sweeten a deal like that?
I would say probably draft picks at this point is the best course of action. And
do you
think
it's draft picks, or do you think you'd have to throw in a prospect?
I personally think that any trades the Sabres are going to make this summer comes with better than draft picks, meaning prospects or players that are already there that maybe outplayed their expectation this year. And you can say, we're going to sell high right now. Because people are looking at the Sabres saying, hey, if they're good, the draft picks are going to be 28, 29, 26, or it's not a top 15. So I think their teams are going to stay away from that.
They might. But I think, too, for some teams, if you don't have the best prospect pool and you don't have the best developmental system, sometimes those draft picks are better to have just to send them back out again, right? Because if you bring in a prospect and you don't intend to use them and they're just more trade fodder for you, then it starts to look a little wonky, and I'm just curious how much teams are going to try to, like, arm themselves with as much trade capital and draft capital as possible, because the best way to get high-end talent, draft and development. But if not, it's through trade. So you need to have everything at your disposal to use it. Also, if we see teams get serious about offer sheets, which who's to say? I mean, look, it's the prime year for it, but we talk about it all the time. If you can move out your own picks and then replenish them in another way, I think that could help too.
I'm really stuck here because there's so many directions to go. And I'm not sure I was necessarily prepared to do it today. But when you, when you answered earlier that Tuck would be the priority, like, I'm sorry, I think Benson's deal has to get done. And then you know what else you have. But maybe
I think that's not the wrong course of action, right? Because we look at it right now, Benson's the future. He's the present. He's the future. You want to get that done and figure out the rest. It's not a wrong move because that's a top six guy. Mm-hmm. If this was like a third line RFA, I'd be like, are you nuts? Like, that's a later problem. But I just think sometimes general managers treat their RFAs as later problems. But if they can get that deal done and get it as team friendly as possible for them, because he's a star, like, go for it.
I'll ask you about goaltending just because, I mean, like, with the way the schedule is and the playoffs, we may talk more about the, you know, the conference finals and the finals when we have you on again. I mean, the Sabres kind of rotated three guys all season long, or Colton Ellis was in there. Lyon, Luukkonen, they were, you know, back and forth in the Montreal series and early in the Boston series. Would you look around and saying, like, we have a really good team and maybe we need a little bit more? Like, Bobrovsky is going to be UFA. Freddie Anderson, who's in Carolina right now, is going to be UFA at the end of the year. They have Bussy and Kochetkov in Carolina, and they, you know, that's what it is. Now, I was thinking Gustafson in Minnesota, but he's going to have off-season hip surgery, so I'm staying away from that. But would you look at what's possibly out there, knowing that other teams like Edmonton and maybe even Pittsburgh and other teams may be looking around at goaltending this summer?
Yeah, I mean, why not look? Doesn't hurt, right? You're not doing your job in management if you're not looking at every solution, every answer, every option out there. I don't think goaltending needs to be the priority number one. Like, I think a center or right-handed D would probably take precedent here, especially because the Sabres have options. But I would be curious on the other side of it too. Like, what teams could look at the Sabres goaltending situation and go, it could be crowded, right? If they trust Ellis, if they trust Lyon to play more, or Luukkonen, like, that's three goaltenders right there, plus anyone else in the pipeline and system. So if you're another team, like, do you look to Buffalo and say, maybe we could take one of those goalies off their hands and then they're free to do whatever they want? So I think that's the other element of it. I don't know if I would necessarily buy high on Frederik Andersen right now because, yes, he's been fantastic, but the track record and the injuries are a little shaky for me. But, and the same goes for someone like Bobrovsky. It's going to be in the later stages of his career, and I would fear a team would be paying for past championships instead of, you know, future play. And I have a feeling we're going to see him, like, play less and less in regular season so yeah, he can be that playoff guy. So I don't know how much those veterans would be on, like, front of mind, but I'd be curious too, like, if other teams are going to the Sabres for goaltending and then there's a way to, like, move out a contract and freshen up the crease, like, why not just see if that's an option?
What did you think of the play of the goaltenders in the postseason?
You know, Marty, I think you made a really good point. I think it was on the sheet about why Luukkonen made more sense as a starter at times in this series because he could handle those defensive breakdowns and come up with the big saves.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I thought he should have started game six, but just putting him in was that energy boost. Lyon, to me, at this point, he's like a fixer in net. Like, you need something, you can put him in. He's been there for multiple teams. You look at what he did for, you know, the Panthers, Detroit in the past. It's like, you could throw him in and he could be your guy, but I think he could be your guy for a time. And I think the Sabres experienced that this postseason. Like, he's good while he's good, and then you're going to have other options because he's not going to be your four-round starter. And it's going to be interesting to see if Luukkonen could be that. I think that there's a little bit more potential there, and he plays well behind the Sabres. But, you know, I look at some of the defensive breakdowns above all else. Like, you look at that game six start, and they go down 3-0, and you could say Lyon should have had multiple of those goals, and you'd be absolutely right. But I felt like the Sabres at times looked so panicked in their own zone as well that it contributed to why he should have, you know, like, it goes both ways here. The goalies, it's a tough one because usually tandem situations stop once the playoffs come around. They've rotated more. They went against the grain. So there's something, I think, for the Sabres to learn from it, for maybe the rest of the league. Like, can that work a little bit more here? But ideally, you wanted that when the playoffs come around, it's easier to make that this is the number one starter answer.
I'm not a rebel. I don't want to go against usually the trend, but I think what people are going to say this year, oh, well, you have Dobesh, right? And you have Freddie Anderson, and you have Carter Hart, and you have the lumberyard of Wedgwood and Blackwood in Colorado. These are the top four guys that are in the conference finals. You don't need a top number one. I still believe you need a guy that, even if you play them 55 games a year, or 50, and you have somebody plays 32, but you know the separation. You know what you have, as opposed to, well, this month they're going to go 7-7, and then the next month maybe it's 9-5, and whatever, right, in 14 games. I feel like you need to get that defined starter.
And so who needs Aiden Hill?
Nobody.
Well, Vancouver or Vegas is likely going to try to do something, right? Because they, as always, are up against it cap wise.
Yeah, and well, I mean, like I said, you got the Vancouver situation, you've got Edmonton situation, you've got Pittsburgh situation, you've got a lot of situations.
Pittsburgh's fine; they got their two guys.
They have Shilovs and
Mershov.
Mershov, yeah, but again, like. Maybe they want a third guy that's more of a veteran guy that they can have, because a lot of teams are going to three now because of that. So I think there will be movement in the goalie market this summer, Shayna. I don't know. That's just me. I think there will be goalie movement.
I agree. I think there's going to be goalie movement. We say it every year. I mean it. I think there's going to be goalie movement. There has to be some because I think that Hill contract's got to go. I think that Jari contract's got to go. But I'm really with you on the narratives every postseason. It's so interesting what people learn from the Final Four teams, right? And this is a story I'm going to work on soon. And I go through it every year. And when the Panthers go back-to-back, all of a sudden the conversation shifts back to, actually, you do need a number one goalie. Before that, you didn't. Because Vegas said you didn't. You could get through the playoffs with five guys. And Colorado does it with Kemper. And everyone, I felt like, discounted what Kemper did all year, right? Because he wasn't perfect the year that they won. He was dealing with the eye injury.
Yes.
Then Bob wins, and it's like, look, $10 million goalie, bonafide starter. That's your guy. That's what everybody needs. He felt the same way with Vasilevsky. So right. It's so, everyone's so fickle with this and just changes. And yes, you have to be adaptable in today's league, but also we don't have to be that dramatically different. Like, you look at the goaltending situation in that Western Conference final, it's going to be so fascinating to see how the Avs handle it, because we did start seeing them change up the rotation a bit. Mm-hmm. And with Vegas, I wouldn't be super confident in Hart still in his rebound control against a team like the Avs. And you shift to the East. Anderson has been the guy right now. But, like, Dobish is the one that people are pointing to. Like, look, he's cheap and he's a rookie. And also, he was their guy. You look at it down the stretch, he was their starter. He took over the starting net and was fantastic. And now he is the guy. There's no questions about it in Montreal. I still think you need a number one, or at least someone who's a 1A and then the playoffs start. And that's your number one. No questions asked.
Shayna, we got to fly. Enjoy the conference finals.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We'll wrap it up after this on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
It's close.
I'll blame the persistent ringing in my ear for my stupidity earlier and putting you on the spot about the Skinner deal.
Yeah, no, you can't move buyout money. So that's 6.4 this year, and the 2 point some the next three years is locked in.
Because we would have talked about it every year prior.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even the movie Dumb and Dumber totally redeemed himself by trading the van for a little mini bike on their way to Colorado. So we had to redeem ourselves later in the show.
The point was, you will be moving out money somehow, some way, this summer to make room.
You're going to have to. You have to maybe even move out like $5 or $6 million to make the room, right?
I'm so in a fog, just like they were in 75 on this date.
Well, that was a win, so
a win.
Take that as a win if there was fog on the ice.
Was the show a win?
And May 20th, 1975 was the fog game, overtime game-winning goal by Rene Robert through Bernie Perrant's leg. Legs, because he had two, obviously. And Gilbert Perreault with the nice cross-corner dump. The low ice camera shows a lot of fog. The game camera wasn't as foggy.
I know, it's crazy.
It's crazy to think that at ice level, that maybe is what it looked like.
Yes, and the conference finals begin tonight in the West with Vegas taking on Colorado.
Kale McCarr is out for game one. We saw that in the Minnesota series. He was in and out of the locker room during the game. It looked like a right shoulder, right arm injury, but he's not going to play game one. So that is a big development. I still think Colorado is the better team and should win in five.
Well, McCarr's not healthy. I don't like their chances. But anyway, Lindy Ruff speaks in the 4 o'clock hour today, followed by Jarmo Kekäläinen. You can tune in on Sabres socials and sabres.com. What do you expect?
Well, obviously, I mean, a lot of people want to talk about Lindy's future, right? What he was able to accomplish this year and the playoff run. So we'll wait to hear what they say. We'll talk about it on this show tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, tomorrow will be our final show of the week.
Yes.
Are you excited about that?
Always excited.
It's going to be a huge show. We'll see you then.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week. Hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.